A reading from the book of Genesis. When hunger came to be felt throughout the land of Egypt, and the people cried to Pharaoh for bread, Pharaoh directed all the Egyptians to go to Joseph and do whatever he told them. When the famine had spread throughout the land, Joseph opened all the cities that had grain and rationed it to the Egyptians, since the famine had gripped the land of Egypt. In fact, all the world came to Joseph to obtain rations of grain, for famine had gripped the whole world. The sons of Israel were among those who came to Egypt to procure rations. It was Joseph, as governor of the country, who dispensed the rations to all the people. When Joseph's brothers came and knelt down before him with their faces to the ground, he recognized them as soon as he saw them. But he concealed his own identity from them and spoke sternly to them. With that, he locked them up in the guardhouse for 3 days. On the third day, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you shall live, for I am a God-fearing man. If you have been honest, only one of your brothers need to be confined in this prison, while the rest of you may go and take home provisions for your starving families. But you must come back to me with your youngest brother. Your words will be thus verified, and you will not die." To this they agreed. To one another, however, they said, "Alas, we are being punished because of our brother. We saw the anguish of his heart when he pleaded with us, yet we paid no heed. That is why this anguish has now come upon us." "Didn't I tell you," broke in Reuben, "not to do wrong to the boy? But you wouldn't listen. Now comes the reckoning for his blood." They did not know, of course, that Joseph understood what they said, since he spoke with them through an interpreter. But turning away from them, he wept. The word of the Lord. Lord, let your mercy be upon us as we place our trust in you. Give thanks to the Lord in the harp. With the ten-stringed lyre, chant his praises. Sing to him a new song. Pluck the strings skillfully with shouts of gladness. Lord, let your mercy be upon us as we place our trust in you. The Lord brings to naught the plans of nations. He foils the designs of peoples. But the plan of the Lord stands forever, the design of his heart through all generations. Lord, let your mercy be on us as we place our trust in you. But see, the eyes of the Lord are upon those who fear him, upon those who hope for his kindness to deliver them from death and preserve them in spite of famine. Lord, let your mercy be on us as we place our trust in you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority to expel unclean spirits and to cure sicknesses and disease of every kind. The names of the 12 apostles are these: first, Simon, now known as Peter, and his brother Andrew; James, Zebedee's son, and his brother John; Philip and Bartholomew; Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector; James, son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus; Simon the Zealot, party member, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. Jesus sent these men on mission as the 12, after giving them the following instructions: do not visit pagan territory, and do not enter a Samaritan town. Go instead after the lost sheep of the house of Israel. As you go, make this announcement: the reign of God is at hand. The Gospel of the Lord. Today's first reading, in a strange way, illustrates two opposite mistakes about what contrition really is. And the first mistake is the failure to recognize our sin until we're faced with its consequences. That's the case of Joseph's brothers. We don't hear much about they're feeling badly for having sold their brother into slavery in spite of his piteous cries for mercy, being only a teenage boy, until they're starving with their families. Then they recognize that maybe they've done something wrong, and maybe that's the reason for their condition. How often we just don't even recognize our sins until we're faced with our consequences, and then our sorrow for our sin is often mixed with our sorrow for the consequences themselves. The other opposite mistake with regard to contrition is not really the point of today's gospel, but it is scapegoating. Facing some evil consequence and then looking around for the reason for it. Now, as I say, that's not the message of today's first reading, because the story makes it quite clear that the reason for their plight is, in fact, what they have done to Joseph. But nonetheless, it is a common aspect of human condition that when bad things happen, we want to find out who's guilty. And so we look at ourselves and we look at others. And then we fix the blame. In the time of the Second World War, during the Nazi era, Jews were to blame for everything. Then for a while, it was our prejudice against African-American peoples as being to blame for everything. Now, our country, it seems to be immigrants blamed for everything, from crime to terrorism. Sometimes, it's homosexuals. And I would even say in our day, sometimes it's pedophiles. As horrible as that crime is, still in all, I think we tend to fix the many evils with regard to children in our society, all the way from child slavery to child neglect, on this one cause, and therefore excuse ourselves from looking more deeply into other causes for the condition of our children today. So these are two mistakes with regard to contrition. Number one, not recognizing what's wrong until we're faced with the consequences. And number two, scapegoating. It's the response today that tells us what is the true motive for contrition, and that is God's mercy. The core of contrition is not looking at our sins and what's the cause for our sins, but keeping our eyes focused on God's mercy. Lord, let your mercy be on us as we place our trust in you, says that responsorial psalm. We have hope in the face of our sins, not because we can locate them as the cause of our ills, but because God forgives our sin. In today's gospel, Jesus appoints the 12 and sends them out to do what? To preach the reign of God. God's mercy is the center of the reign of God. It is that which we as church are commissioned to preach. And even our celebration today of St. Benedict reminds us of that. When I entered religious life, as all Dominicans do, I think, I was asked, "What do you seek?" Well, now, the first answer that came to my mind before we went through the ceremony was, "Well, I'm looking for the Dominican habit. I'm looking for the mission to go out and preach." The response that we were taught that we should say is, "I seek God's mercy and yours, yours being the communities. I think we all spend a lifetime learning the fullness of that simple question and response. Saint Benedict gave us the model which has strongly influenced all kinds of religious life in the Western Church. And at the heart of religious life is the same thing that it's the heart of Christian life. We come to recognize, to proclaim, and to seek God's mercy. For it is only in light of God's mercy that we can be truly contrite.